United Services to order. Today is Tuesday, May 8th, and thank you very much for all being here. Senator was a little late today. Senator Gordley, of course, is on time. Thank you very, very much. What I'd like to do, as I said, another point. What I'd like to do is save the last 15 minutes of today to do House Bill 2186. And so we'll take this meeting from now until about 2:15 and then call the people up to present that bill. Any good words for the order before we start calling our agenda for today? Representative Corrett.
I'm withdrawing my question from yesterday.
Do you withdraw your question from yesterday?
The good director spent about 25 minutes with me after we completed our meeting.
Good.
And answered all my questions.
Very good. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank, good to see Mr. Monday, the Chief Executive Officer for the Urban League of Portland from my district, visiting with us today. Thank you very much. And with that in mind, we'll go back to public hearing on House Bill 5031, Department of Human Services. Testifying today, Mr. Serzinger, Mr. Pekovesh, Ms. Nelson, and Ms. Baxter. Will you join us, please? Yes, Ms. Baxter. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. While they're coming up, I just point out you have a replacement page 20 in front of you. This is the infrastructure investment package. So just to make sure that that gets into your notebooks. And if you put it in now, then you will be at the right place for their presentation, starting on page 21.
I'm Jim Scherzinger, Deputy for Finance, Department of Human Services. And we left off yesterday on page 20, which was Prop 106-59, which is a one-time investment in process improvement for the department. This is an extension of a pilot project that we are currently undergoing within the finance units of the department. And I think there's a couple of ways you can think about this. One is, I know you've had a lot of discussion about in here about workload standards and trying to staff based on workload standards. Well, there's really two ways you can deal with workload standards. One is to increase the staffing, and the second is to reduce the workload. And I think you could put process improvement in the category of efforts to try to reduce the workload, and we'll talk about how it does that as we go through. The second thing is that we spend a lot of money in state government, all kinds of government, on investing in new information systems. And the truth of the matter is that we'll get better investments, sometimes less expensive investments, if we do a better job of process improvement before we get into new investments. And in fact, that's one of the things that when the operations review team went through our existing finance structure, what they said is that we don't really know enough to buy, even though we probably need new systems, that we don't know enough about what we need to really buy an entire new system, and that we needed a lot more work on process improvement. And that's what this effort that we're currently going through in the finance department is. So Fairbors is going to describe briefly the sort of the process that we're going through in finance right now. This is the kind of process that we would be extending across the department under this infrastructure investments. And then I'm going to come back and talk about some of the specific things we've done in finance with these tools.
Okay. I'm sure. Thank you. I just thought I'd throw out a question before you started. I'm glad you brought up the IT issue, because I wrote a note to myself yesterday about how does process improvement have any interaction or interplay with the investments we're trying to make in our IT systems. We have legacy system issues. So I guess my question after that comment is, can we not invest in some of those IT issues this biennium if we're going to work on process improvement first? And we have some other IT investments that are on the list for this biennium.
We currently have IT projects going, IT investments that are currently underway. And it's important to be sure that your processes are working as best they can before you really make IT investments. And so one of the things we're doing to some extent here is catching up with some of the efforts that we currently have going to improve our systems. Even those improvements, though, will still leave us with many systems that more systems than we ought to have, and going through process improvement and really maximizing the use of our current systems and our new ones that are coming online will help us understand what it is we can do to get even better IT systems. That's the way I'd say it, is that you really have to understand what it is you need in order to really maximize your use of IT. When I was at Fordham Public Schools, this is one thing that always, well, I guess it shouldn't amaze me, but we replaced our entire IT system. Not budget so much because we never had one for budget, but accounting, personnel, payroll, the student information system. We spent $30 million on it, and we did it with, you know, on time, almost on time, but within the budget, and you never read about that. We never read about that. And so government can do this stuff, but you have to do it the right way. And it's the times that it doesn't work that you hear about. And I think there's no doubt, and you'll hear some of this as we go through this, that we need new systems, but we really need to understand better what we need before we really pursue them beyond what we're already doing. That's what I'd say.
Thank you. To follow up?
Sure.
Thank you. I'll rephrase the question, I guess, because that's helpful. I guess my question is the department proposing any delays in investment in IT while we do the process issue, and are there savings there for this biennium?
We are not. I think the ones that we have are going right now are really needed. And this will give us a better chance of integrating those investments into our system. I mean, the ones we have going right now are the MMIS system is a big one, and it's a really needed improvement, and it's going to be needed under any system. And particularly the way it's funded, we have to go forward with the way it is. And I just think this is going to help. Going through this will help us integrate that better into our current system, because we'll understand how the whole system works. As we integrate that improvement into our system.
Thank you. That the legislature has been most negligent, I think, in terms of how we have helped to bring our data systems into play. One of the great and rarest opportunities we had was in 2000, from 99 to 2000, when we were doing the Y2K, which I got tired of hearing about all the time. If we had invested during that time, what we need to invest, take in consideration, that was during the time we were having a downturn in the economy. So it's circumstances that has led to our not being able to do some of the things, but that would have been, a very good time when we were making changes to accommodate the 21st century in doing this kind of stuff. Jim, are there comments you'd like to say on that piece in terms of timeliness, that we had the dollars to invest? Well, that's kind of behind you. I don't want you to do this. I don't want you to get politically in trouble. But that would have been a good time to do it. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it all right to ask a couple more questions about details on this POP?
Sure.
I would just like to hear a little short bit of information on the amount of services and supplies is a little under 20% of the cost of the three positions. Is this pretty standard if I looked at other positions or at other policy option packages? Would that be about the same relative amount, how much you spend on services and supplies compared to the positions? And The other, and I'm still on POP 106-59, and the other question is federal funds. It's nice to see that you would be anticipating the receipt of $3 million. I'm just interested how that money comes to us, that they're investing in this upgrade.
On the two questions, the services and supplies would be fairly typical. I think that would be associated with those kinds of positions. The federal funds come because this is an administrative cost that, like any other administrative cost of the department of, the division and the administrative services division, and it would go through cost allocation like any other charges, and so some of that would be imposed on federal funds.
So, then it's through the cost allocation and the formula-based reimbursements from the federal government, not specific grants.
Right, that's correct.
Thank you. Further questions?
Mrs.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. Fair Board Spoxwell, Chief Administrative Officer for the Department. And if I may, Representative Kopek, tomorrow when we do our information services presentation, we will address some of your questions. My presentation today, the way that we have broken this up is that I'm going to talk just briefly about what is GAIN, because we keep referring to GAIN, so that we all have a common understanding of what it is and how did we go about doing this pilot project, what methodology we used, and then how do we intend to expand this to the rest of the department if the pilot happens to produce the kind of results that we were expecting. And then Jim will cover how it is working within finance. Actually, Senator Bakes yesterday provided some background about how we came in contact with John Ramsey, who has many years of experience in applying GAIN, and some of you know him and have met with him, and I will refer to him and some of the experiences that he's had throughout this process. And frankly, it is a huge advantage for us to have access to Mr. Ramsey. And again, Senator Bates, you mentioned yesterday the kind of investment that it takes to have somebody like him on board, and he's basically doing this pro bono. And the other thing that I wanted to mention before I start was that Lean as a methodology is not totally new to DHS. We have been doing this, but really our approach has been point solutions rather than an enterprise approach to applying Lean. And what the POP is proposing is taking an enterprise approach and apply this thing to the entire department. So I'll start on page 21 of your presentation. Basically, what is Lean? It's a leadership approach, a management philosophy, and a set of tools that together help to reduce waste and non-value added activities. And, you know, a one-liner on the top of the page says Lean is simply the relentless pursuit of waste elimination. And if you notice that has a pretty close resemblance to one of the luxury car makers' punchline in their commercial, you know, the relentless pursuit of perfection, it is not a coincidence. The next page, page 22, Lean as a methodology emerged from Toyota and the Toyota production system. And this slide demonstrates the 7 type of waste that we're talking about, and an additional one that I'll just cover in a moment, that was initially highlighted in the late 40s by Taiichi Ono, who was the architect of the Toyota production system, a system that has now been adopted by many other companies, including GE, Lockheed Martin, and others. And so you can see the 7 type of waste, and then the one that is highlighted in red, intellect, that basically relates to the people who we have and the knowledge and the skills that they have that are underutilized or not utilized. And these type of wastes have a direct impact on the quality of the services that we provide, the quantity of the services that we provide, and the people who we are touching by providing those services. Page 23 talks about what a lean enterprise is, and it is a combination of culture, philosophy, mindset, and really a different way of doing business. And as a culture, it focuses on continuous improvement, open-minded thinking, and challenging the norm. And by doing these things, the intent is to optimize costs, quality, and customer service. Now, the question that comes up, and we hear this often, is, well, does it really apply to social services? This is a production methodology. This is a factory methodology. How does it relate to social services or to government? And in fact, Lean has been adopted successfully to work both in social service environments, in health services environment, not too far away from us. In Seattle, we have two health systems. One is the Virginia Mason Medical Center, and the other one is the Swedish Hospital, both of which have successfully utilized Lean to improve health services dramatically. And now, as far as government, the next page, 24, shows that the state of Iowa has used Lean and applied it to 50 different business processes in a variety of settings. Four examples of four different departments are noted on page 24, Department of Human Services, and you know it highlights some of the significant efficiencies that has been achieved, reducing delays by 79%. Decisions reduced by 83% and loopbacks by 99%. And then you can see some of the same type of deficiencies in other type of departments. So on page 25, we talk about how did we go about doing this pilot project. We used a competitive procurement process through RFP process. And the statement of work was carefully drafted with significant inputs and participation from John Ramsey. Again, we at an enterprise level had not done anything like this before, and as Senator Bates mentioned yesterday, Mr. Ramsey, with his experience of working in an organization similar to the size and budget of DHS, had done this for many years. So it was very important as to how we draft this statement of work.
Go back to, if you will, competitive procurement process. Remember, since 85% of the dollars that that comes into DHS goes back out into a competitive process. And give the committee a little example of competitive procurement process and how you can initiate the Lean concept into that.
Madam Chair, when I talk about the competitive procurement process in this particular context, I mean when we went out there and looked for companies that could come in and help us implement this thing, we used the RFP process. And if I'm not mistaken, what you are referring to is that given that 85% of our the money in DHS goes to the providers, counties, partners, how does this Lean process impact those?
That's right. Okay. That's the question.
Thank you. So that's a very interesting question and a complicated one.
Okay.
Our intent, and I think what John Ramsey holds strongly, is that for this process to work and for us to really get the ultimate value for our money, Lean or some sort of similar methodology that brings significant efficiencies has to be implemented in those areas where this 85% money is spent. One of the examples that he cited for us was that some significant savings in Lockheed Martin was achieved through the suppliers that did business with that company. And I think that would be probably the second phase of this project, mainly for the fact that we have to be able to demonstrate that we can make this methodology and this philosophy work within DHS before we can start to hold others accountable for it. So the pilot process is to introduce that first phase.
Okay.
And as soon as we get into the bigger project, then the next step would be to go further.
Senator,
When James and Representative Kotek, food vendors.
I noted that in the state of Iowa, they, you know, the area that they looked at in human services or what they're involved in is the interstate compact, which, you know, is linking between one state and the other. We're actually talking about a process of paper back and forth. In the pilot project, what area are you planning on actually working with?
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, the pilot project that we're engaged in right now focuses on finance alone.
Okay.
So by that, I mean three different offices within the department. There's Office of Financial Services, Office of Finance and Policy Analysis, and Office of Payment Accuracy and Recovery. Okay. And that's the pilot program. If you go to the enterprise level within DHS, it would include all areas within DHS, which would also include the placement of children.
And a part of finance, are you also looking at where the branch offices become responsible for the budget?
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, great question, and yes, we are looking at the links that exist between the branch offices and the central office. And in fact, in last Friday's cabinet meeting, one of the things that was discussed by the leadership, Jim, Clyde, and our director, was this whole concept of accountability, to push the accountability down to the office level so that all managers are accountable for their budget. But for that to happen, we need to be able to provide those managers with information so that they can manage their budget.
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, where we are right now with that is that we did a value stream around the whole budget to actual process, and Fairwells will talk about what that means in a second, but then we decided that the first division that we would go to really develop a model budget to actual report was AMH, which includes the state hospital, and then the next one would be CAF, which would get into the branch offices. So right now we've just completed what's called the rapid improvement event for AMH, and now they're working on the redesign of the budget to actual reports, and when those are done, then the next step will be CAF that we will take on.
I can make the assumption that eventually it will be all of those budgets that actually the field have responsibility or have an impact or influence on.
That's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to briefly go back to page 23 because, so you know where I'm coming from, having watched what happened with reorg, you know, reorganization a few years back, I think we actually made some steps towards continuous improvement that I think is something that the department is actually doing well and moving down that path. The bullet points about open-minded thinking and challenging the norm are ones that I want to make sure we focus on and cultivate. I think there are some individuals in the department who actually embody that, and I've seen that in certain sections of the department. But that's a leadership norm, and I think the new leadership team is promoting that, but those to me are more critical than continuous improvement, because I think that there's been some effort in there. Encouraging people to think outside the box and not worry about maybe bringing, you know, they're very worried about the budgets, and that sometimes stifles us. So I'm wondering how you're going to cultivate those particular bullets, open-minded thinking and challenging the norm. So maybe you can bring that up as you go in your presentation.
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Kopek, I'd be glad to do that. One thing that I wanted to point out is that Lean is a methodology that is ultimately designed and implemented by both management and significant representation and input from labor. In this process, we actually have a labor representative that sits on the executive steering committee for this project, and they have significant input. Lean is not a methodology that's top-down driven, and it really is about the possible. which is out-of-the-box thinking. Now, it's a whole lot easier to talk about than do, as you know. And, you know, I'll refer to that because, and I think somebody, I think it was you, Madam Chair, yesterday mentioned something about culture. So, and I think that's what you are also talking about. And that is one of our significant challenges, and it includes all of us. I fit within that. You know, I've lived in this system, not in DHS, but in this system for 17 years. So, and that is precisely why we can't do this by ourselves. We need outside help, because for us, you know, there are a lot of things that have become the norm. We don't see them anymore. And but, you know, we do have a director that challenges us, who challenges us. And, you know, in fact, you know, his thinking is that, you know, we're asking for $5 million, and if they can make the case, he'll ask us, do you need more? I mean, that's how eager he is and how optimistic he is. And I think, honestly, that is contagious. It has... but we'll talk about that as we go through this presentation.
I appreciate your candor. Thank you.
So the next point is that Kaufman Global was selected as a contractor. They're a company that are well known in lean implementation. And the project is currently underway. And it is that engagement with Kaufman is scheduled to wrap up sometime in June. But we will continue in finance to implement those lean principles and to try to create the efficiencies within the organization. And by the way, this was something, and I think Jim explained this yesterday, that was initiated by the operations review team, Rep. Sandy Morgan. You were part of that, and you probably know much more detail about the project and why we're here and why we're trying to do this. Page 26 refers to the approach that we took. Basically, the statement of work was divided into two segments, task one and task two. Task one was analysis, which I will cover, and task two is the continuous improvement piece that Jim will cover in his presentation. But basically, in task one, we asked for four deliverables. We asked the contractor to provide us a project plan that showed, you know, when is the project beginning, when is it ending, what are the milestones, and how are we going to resource internally and externally to achieve those. The second piece was baselining, or creating a picture of what is. And this becomes very important because quite often we have a tendency to jump into changing things before really getting a sense of what does the present picture, the current landscape look like. And again, I think Jim mentioned a few moments ago, and this relates to your question, Representative Koltek, around IT systems. A year and a half ago, 2 years ago, we were anxious to throw a system solution to this finance problem that we had in the department. But I think we resisted that temptation. And if we would have done that, we would have simply just made our mistakes and inefficiencies more efficient, you know, by throwing a multi-million dollar IT system at the problem. And what, in fact, we're doing now. And the next page 27, shows you a process that is used to create that baseline, a picture of what is.
One of the interesting things about this when I was involved in this over the interim was to watch them go through the what is part of this. And I don't know if you still have that room that we met in, but the whole room ended up being lined with charts of how the process actually worked. And it was an interesting process, because no one understood the whole system. And so as they stepped through it and charted it out, they find out that people that were doing things over here had no idea what the people over here were doing with the information. And it came as kind of a shock to a lot of us that, first of all, there were so many things that happened outside of the actual system. There were a lot of people in cubicles that were just doing things with spreadsheets and then passing it on, and how much of it was taking place without any kind of coordinated look across the system at all. So I think it was a really powerful thing for everybody that saw that, what the potential was to make it work better than it already worked.
Thanks.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, thank you for explaining slide 27, because that's what, what it's about. And, you know, when you look at that, the green sticky notes identify the strengths in the system. The yellow sticky notes signify areas where we need to do more looking into. And the pink sticky notes identify areas for improvement. And then when you, where you see a red flag, that says there is a huge opportunity here to make a big difference. So, and again, it is very low tech, but high touch. Everybody, ultimately, this is basically called the Brown Paper Fair. And if you come to DHS, the fourth floor, today you'll see yards of this paper that is mapping many processes within finance. And almost every employee who work in these areas walk by these charts and they make notes. Again, everybody is involved. So just briefly going back to slide 26, the next piece then becomes benchmarking. And by that, what I mean is look, finding like organizations that we're going to benchmark against. And this is a continuous process. It really is never ending. In the private sector, when you benchmark with an organization, 6 months later, if that organization is on the edge of technology or doing the business that they're in, they would have moved to the, you know, are doing things better. So this benchmarking things becomes a continuous process. It's something that we're not used to, at least in finance. You know, other parts of the organization do it, but we're not doing this at the enterprise level. One of the intents that we have through this process is to begin benchmarking not only against with public organizations, but also with some private sector organizations. And again, Jim will explain in a few minutes significant opportunities that exist within finance to do this.
Questions? Representative Garrard?
I'm still having problem in a way visualizing the application. I see a whole line of people, each one suddenly more aware of how their work affects somebody else. But how does that apply to actually making the whole thing run better?
Representative Garrard.
I'm 2 pages behind. I don't understand it. So.
We'll get there, but there clearly has to be a path. This process simply is identifying the problems. The next step would be how do we get to solutions. And then, you know, the fourth deliverables on that, on page 26, is basically for the contractor to create a vision of DHS lean finance. What would we look like if we were operating efficiently and were a lean organization? And then task two, naturally, is continuous improvement. Slide 28 demonstrates a graphical representation of a handoff chart. This is also referred to as a spider chart. And what you're noticing here is the number of times that handoffs occur in a process. Again, going back to what Representative Morgan brought up, through doing this process mapping, we become aware of rework, a lot of things that are being duplicated or being reworked. And what these two charts signify is a 50% reduction as a result of pointing out those redundancies and rework.
So, Representative Morgan, just to clarify, a handoff is what?
Go ahead.
Jim Scherzinger, Department of, a handoff is essentially every time you give the work to somebody else to for them to take it up and continue the work. So the more handoffs you have, the more potential for error there is. Every time you hand it off, there's a delay as it sits in somebody's box. You may have to interpret it for them so that they can properly use it. And there's a potential there's an error made.
So a handoff is a physical change in who's possessing the information.
That's correct.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, it also could be an electronic handoff where, you know, a document is being, you know, given from one person to the next, and basically a duplicative process that could be eliminated and significantly reduce, again, rework.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gerard.
Can you follow one of these handoffs for me in this chart?
Madam Chair, Representative Gerard, this is not one that was created in DHS Finance. This is one that basically, if you notice on the bottom of this page, it's a chart from Kaufman Global, a handoff chart that they created in a process that they did for a different company. And we have done similar charts like this, and we'd be glad to bring those and explain the handoffs.
You should go over there and take a look at that.
I'm just trying to find the starting place where it says go, and it doesn't.
Oh, sorry, Representative Gerard. You have to go over there. I agree with Representative Morgan. And you can see go, and you can see stop, and you can see come, and you can see exchange, and all that stuff.
You'll get it really quickly.
Are there any dice to roll?
I'm sorry, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just want to encourage us to also think it's not just about pieces of paper, because when I think of handoff, I think of the different caseworkers that a child has through the child welfare system. And is that the most efficient? That's it. We've got lots of handoffs there.
Absolutely.
And that's a child, not a piece of paper. So
that's maybe not that far yet. So then going to page 29, and this gets back to Representative Gerard's question. What do we do with all this information? So we have baselined the organization. We know where we are. And we have benchmark organizations that we want to be like. So what this represents here is a graphical representation of where companies rank. And in this case, there are 20 different keys, 20 different areas of key metrics for the organization to know where they are. And I'll just take one and quickly run through it. For example, when you look at leadership, number one, basically the way that you would rank this is that if the organization has no or little vision and people who work in that organization are not really aware of that, then you rank one on that scale of 1 to 5. And, and again, you can see it's basically traditional organizations to invincible organizations. I don't know of any organizations in the world that are invincible. In fact, on a lean scale of 1 to 100, the highest ranking company in the world is Toyota, that ranks at about 84. And the best public sector organizations rank at about 50. But you take each one of these different 20 keys and you rank the organization against where are we and where do we want to get to, and then you have to create a path. Basically, process improvement events, and Jim will explain some of those that has been done in finance, and again, the significant opportunities that exist for improvement and how are we planning to get there. And just to reiterate, again, going back to a point that I made earlier, before Kaufman came to our organization, we had two people in our organization who were lean certified and were doing this in various parts of the organizations. And in one rapid process improvement session that was done for the Oregon Health Plan Processing Center, they process applications. We basically made we reduced the processing days out by 88%, and we reduced overtime by 100% through this lean process. So we do have some experience with this thing, but again, at an enterprise level, we do need help to do this.
Representative Morgan, the piece of this where the different aspects of the operation are rated on the scale, has the organization done this piece yet?
We have done this piece for finance. And,
okay, is this it? What we're looking at?
No, you're not looking. We are still gathering data. One of the problems that we had, Representative Morgan, was one of the things that we're not good at is really collecting baseline data. Again, this process is teaching us things, and we are now much more diligent in trying to collect that baseline data to see where it is exactly that we rank. That's pretty important information for us to know where we are before we can move on.
So, if I might, you might, to arrive at a place where finance has charted itself on this chart, is that in itself a process that is prescribed by the company? So you're collecting certain amounts of data to figure out where you are on this scale in these classifications?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, it is.
When I get to my part, I'll talk about that.
Yeah. And now, you know, for companies that collect this data on a daily basis and are good at it, it's pretty easy to create that baseline. But for us, frankly, we have been for the past few months in the process of learning what it is that we need to collect in order to be able to rank ourselves. And, you know, these 20 keys are different for financial services than they are for OPAR.
Mm-hmm.
They change based on what your book of business is.
Jim said an interesting point when he said when they came, they had a project at Portland Public Schools, and they came in before time on it, and nobody said anything. I want to go back to something you said just a few minutes ago, that you had 88% improvement. Was it food stamp area?
It was processing the application, Madam.
Processing the application. So I want to give you guys kudos for that. And you need to tell your good stories sometimes, send notes to learning centers and that kind of stuff, because I think that's when continuous improvement allows us to say things, too, because we're part of your group of people that you need to inform when things go well, so that we can be a part of it, because we're also a part of the people that gives you more work without you having the chance to analyze and see how it fits into the organization as well. And so I want to give you kudos on that piece as well. Mr. Schlesinger.
Madam Chair, Fairbourn just talked about the sort of logic of Lean. And so I prepared some charts that talk, they're really more an example to talk about how Lean is implemented, and particularly how we're implementing it in finance. When Kaufman first came to the department, they did a whole series of assessments. They did some questionnaires, three different kinds of questionnaires for staff and for the management. They did interviews at all levels within the finance area. They just watched us operate for a while. So they had some observations just from watching. And they did some assessments of our system as a whole. And all of that's available, and it includes some very specific answers to specific questionnaires and observations that people made that they just put up on the wall. I tried to pick one thing out of all of that that I felt like it expressed what they found out, and that's that chart that's on page 30. And what that is the outcome of one of the questionnaires that they did. They asked people that worked in finance, and this included both managers and staff, whether they believed significant improvement was possible and how much. And this is the answer that they got. And the average was about 33%. Almost everyone believed that significant improvement was possible, and they believed that we could improve things. This is just asking them the question without even giving them any metrics or tools to use. They believe significant improvement is possible. They also ranked us on some of the scales that Fairbourn was talking about, and we didn't rank very high on those scales, and nobody fundamentally disagreed with them, although they did assure us that every time they come to a company, doesn't matter whether it's a private company or anybody else, you don't rank very highly at the beginning. So there was a lot of work done on just sort of assessing where we are and what the potential for change is. And one of the heartening things out of this was our staff, by and large, was saying they thought change was possible, and they were willing to try, despite the difficult time that we're doing in the middle of the legislative session. The other thing they found out, and I think this was a bit of a experience for them, was finding out how complex we are. And it's, you know, government in a lot of ways faces some challenges that are not as
common in the private sector. And maybe the easiest way to say that is that in the finance department, in accounting in particular, we essentially have to keep three sets of books. We have three different accounting periods that we have to deal with, and three different sets of accrual rules, if you think about it. We have the financial reporting period, which is a fiscal year, and we have to use GAAP accounting for that. We have the budget, which is a biennium, and we have different accrual rules for the budget than we do for the financial statements in many cases. And then we have the federal fiscal year, and we have to do a lot of federal reporting, essentially on a cash basis for them. So we have different sets of rules, different accounting periods, makes for a very complex system. And different from a private sector, people care about how their money is spent. You go to a private business and you pay for your goods, you don't really care that much how they spend your money. People give us money, they want to know how their money was spent. So we have to do a lot of accounting for, by grant, of how this money is spent. And we have to be able to weigh the conditions of every one of those grants as we make our policy decision. Makes for a very complex system, and the business needs that we have. And the way that I think the easiest way I have to think about it is that we, if you think about what we control, if you're getting a budget to actual report, most offices can control their total spending, but they're accountable for how they spend their general fund. That's what you care about. Are we balanced on the general fund or not? And that's a twist. If what they control is their total spending, but they have to make sure their general fund comes within their authority, you need a tool that to help you figure out how you're really managing that. And that's one of the struggles that we have trying to design in this process. So that's the first thing they did, was this assessment of where we were in our potential for change. And I think that we weren't in really good shape, but we're willing to change, and that's a good thing. I've added two more slides, and I've done this because I think it gets to the point of what Lean is really trying to do when it comes down to the specific tools that you use. Now, these come out of a presentation, I think is like a week-long Lean leadership training that they did. So if you want more charts, we have lots more charts about this. But I think these two really make the point of what it's trying to do. The first one says that the focus is on non-value-added activity. So you have at the top there, you take any process where you're starting someplace and ending someplace, which is that blue bar at the top. The work that takes place during that time period usually takes place at certain discrete periods of time. And that's where those arrows are. It may sit in somebody's box, and then somebody does some work, and then it goes to the next place, and then somebody does some work, and then it goes to the next place, and something like that. And the focus of Lean is not on where those arrows are. It's not on trying to get people to work faster or harder or longer. It's on trying to reduce the amount of the non-value added activity. So the focus is not on where value is being added, but where it's not being added, and can you eliminate that? So it's things like correcting mistakes. Try to get rid of the mistakes in the first place so you don't have to spend time correcting them. Rework, again, it's like rework can happen for lots of reasons. It could be designed in the system that somebody does it one way and then you kind of undo, that gets you so far, and then you undo part of it and redo it. So get rid of rework. Gathering information. Organize your information in a way you don't have to walk around trying to gather it. Handoffs, reducing the number of handoffs and the mistakes that go with them. Producing reports that nobody uses. Those are the kinds of things that it's focusing on to try to eliminate. So it's trying to eliminate the non-value-add activity, not make people work harder and faster when they're actually adding value. The second chart, I think, also gives a sense of what it's trying to do. It says it's engaging the talent. And the point of this chart is that if you think about how traditionally you might want to improve an organization, you might try to say, well, do we have the right vision and strategy? Or is the leadership effective and the kind of direction we're giving people about how to do their work right? It's not that that isn't useful to do that, but their point is that if you really want to improve the work, most of your leverage or most of your benefit is going to be from engaging the people that do the work and making the change. Now, you can get some value out of better leadership and better direction, but you're not going to get real significant improvement, the big huge leaps in improvement, unless you engage the talent of the people that are actually doing the work and create a process for them to improve the work. So that's the focus of what Lean, the specific tools that have been developed for Lean, are trying to do. They're trying to eliminate non-value-add activity, and they're trying to engage the talent or the staff that we have in improving the process and improving the work. So on that next page, page 33, I have a list of implementation tools and that are used in Lean. And I, rather than to go through them all, I mean, I can briefly describe each one. I've picked out a couple of things to really try to make the point that show how it really tries to engage the worker and how it tries to and the mechanism it's using to try to really improve the work.
Thank you, Dr. Bates.
Thank you, ma'am. Madam Chair. Jim, I'm going to go back to the previous page just for a second here, the talent part, executive management and talent. And I want to know if I've got this right. I'm going to go back to an example we ran into when we were doing the reorg about 4 or 5 years ago. And my sense in that it was a great deal of executive management and very little talent involved. And the way I ran into it was I got a call from some of my local workers in one department that takes care of kids at risk. And I got a call from another group that takes care of the foster programs. They've been in the same building right across the hall from each other, and even though they weren't supposed to be talking to each other, had learned to do that. And later they have people come in who, at times, there'll be a perpetrator there who was actually endangering the kids that they were talking about, and they'd warn each other what was going on and take action together. It was a pretty efficiently run organization that way. Within the reorg, they wanted to take those apart and put them in different buildings without any discussion of what was going on by the people actually doing the job. There was a huge boo-ba about it, and we had meetings outside of the offices, and we actually got a letter down from then director of human services saying you are not to talk to any state legislators about this at the local level. That is verboten, and people were threatened with their jobs, all kinds of weird stuff going on. But to me, it was sort of the opposite of what you're talking about here. Is that the kind of thing we're looking at, is trying to get the people on the ground level of doing the work to really bring forward the improvements?
Senator Carter.
Yes, I use it as an example.
Yeah, okay. Madam Chair, Senator Bates. I'm not familiar with that circumstance, but I would say just off the top, yes, you're trying to. The whole purpose of this is to try to engage the worker. It's not to say that leadership and direction aren't important. They are. But you really have to do it all in order to get the significant improvements. There are mechanisms of dealing with that. We already have processes to do that. And this is a mechanism to really try to engage the talent in creating solutions to the issues that we have.
Thank you. Oh, sorry. This reminds me of participatory management. A lot of years ago, we talked about that you have a better system when those who are actually carrying out the system become engaged and help to plan what the system not only looks like, but to carry out the system. And I see some similar concepts in this lean and engaging the talents. And I actually think it's a good path, but because you're also building some ownership with the talents.
If I want to continue, did you want to respond?
I have about 10 minutes.
Okay, I will do that. The implementation, I guess I'll choose to focus on, in one area, on these implementation tools, because I think it's the most important for us. And And that's the area around metrics as you look in these tools. I think the thing that we lack the most, and Fairborn's talked about it a little bit when he talked about benchmarks, is how we really assess ourselves and what metrics do we apply, what numbers do we apply to measure how we do business, and how do we measure improvement. And I think that's the biggest challenge for us, and so I'm going to focus on that rather than some of these other tools. And where this rubber really meets the road is on that column on the left, which is the Lean Daily Management System, which is a management system that would go in place in every work group within the finance department, and which we're beginning to implement. The first ones are beginning to be implemented next week. And I want to focus on two different kinds of assessments. And one of them is the 20 keys that Fairborn talked about. And that's a self-assessment tool where it's maybe a little bit more qualitative in that you assess your work unit about how your work unit operates. And you set goals for your work unit about how you can improve the way that you operate. And the second is the more numbers type of metric, where you measure how your process is working and how you can improve the numbers, the statistics about how your, you know, what are your costs per operation, what's your cycle time, those kinds of things. So there's two different kinds of metrics. Maybe I should go to the first one, the 20 keys first. Just as an example of that, I put down on this page 35, the five different levels for one of those 20 keys, the roles and responsibilities keys. And I picked this one because I think it is getting to the question that, or the statement that Senator Winters made on the kind of management style that's involved in this. And so a one, remember, is the, I guess, traditional level. That's the lowest level. And so under the roles and responsibilities keys, each work group, there's a units of 5 to 9 people, would... If they said that they were at a level one, that would mean that roles and responsibilities are left to evolve on their own or are assumed on the basis of past practices. And there are places that are like that. Level two, a manager specifies roles and responsibilities for each work group member without any discussion. So you know what your role and your responsibility is, but it's simply stated. It's a top-down approach. A three is the work group supervisor or leader meets individually with each work group member, jointly develops specific roles and responsibilities. A four, which is now world class, through group brainstorming and discussion by the entire group, each person's specific role and responsibility is negotiated and defined. And a five, which is invincible, is level four plus all the roles and responsibilities are continually monitored and modified through group discussion. So that's the kind of 20 metric that each one of those 20 keys is doing. And they have a key for, you saw that list of potential keys, everything from how the workspace is organized to how the leadership works, all the way through all the different keys that one might look at.
Thank you.
Representative Garrard?
Thank you. Jim, what effect does turnover have on this whole system?
Well, what they found with Lean is that one of the benefits of it is it reduces the amount of turnover. Now, obviously, the more turnover you have in an organization that relies on the intellect of its staff, it's a challenge. But one of the things that they found in this process is that this kind of system really gives people a stake in their work, that absenteeism goes down, that turnover goes down, that people want to come to work. for more than just, and we have an agency where the people that work in our agency, you know, are not just there for a job, typically. They believe in the mission of the organization, and that's why they're there, by and large. So this is the kind of thing that supports that kind of attitude. The other chart gets to, and this one was taken out of an RPI, the first one we did, and this is, it says establishing an AR process. This is our accounts receivable unit. And they were trying, an accounts receivable unit, the way they operate is they get a request from some part of the organization that somebody owes us some money and you need to bill them for that. So they set up an accounts receivable on the system and they bill them, and then when the revenue comes in, then they clear that account and the revenue is processed. And these are the kinds of metrics that, after they came through that RPI, that they established for themselves. And you can look at what those are. Just taking them, first pass yield, that's the number of times that that they get a request and it goes all the way through the end to the billing without the first time. It never has to stop and go back and have something redone. So obviously, the higher your percentage of first pass yield, the better off you are. It gets all the way through the system and out the door correctly the first time. The total amount of process time, from the time somebody puts in a request to the time that it goes out the door. The cycle time, the process time, I'm sorry, I got confused. It's the total amount of time that they're actually working on it, and the cycle time is the total time from the time it gets in the door to out the door. And both of those are important. The number of handoffs, the cost per request, those kinds of things. Those are the kinds of metrics that a unit might adopt to really measure how well it's performing. And so I think that if you then get into sort of how the Lean Daily Management System works, the creation of a visual display so everybody sees these metrics, the daily meeting, the weekly process improvement meetings, the way you set goals for yourself as a work unit, you get a sense of how this system is really trying to engage the staff and measure work improvement and ultimately roll it up to an improved operation for the entire organization. So maybe I should stop at that. And then the last item that I have is top 106.56, which is the biggest part of this is moving our actual actuarial services that currently is contracted out in-house, hiring an in-house actuary or set of actuaries at significant cost savings to the organization. The second piece of it enhances our forecasting staff, our caseload forecasting staff, to allow us to not just do statewide forecasts but regional forecasts of caseloads.
Tell the committee, Jim, why do you think that bringing it in-house is going to give you greater efficiency or better timing?
Well, you can hire someone at significant less cost than the cost of contracting it out, and at the same time have essentially full-time people who are able to answer questions. And currently, I think our current contract, if I remember it, is for 40 hours of work per month with our existing consultant. Under this proposal, we'll have an in-house actuarial fellow who's passed all the tests, plus two other actuarial levels that have that below that person who are full-time on staff instead of 40 hours of consulting time per month at cost savings.
How much is contracting out costing you now versus what it's going to cost you to bring in three people?
And
you can bring that back.
I can bring that back. If I recall the number, it's something like $700 an hour is the billing rate.
Oh.
Some number like that.
Oh, it's higher?
Well, Madam Chair, I may be wrong. We did this 2 years ago. We asked for some extra actuarial work. I think it was from Price Waterhouse for the F-chips. And I may be wrong, but I remember it being something just unbelievable, like $1,200 an hour. And that's when we started talking about why are we contracting this out instead of having it in-house. And Dr. Goldberg looked at it, you guys got to look at it, and said, whoops, this is something we can do in-house, and get better service. We had a hard time getting information out. It was hard getting requests to them, and back from San Francisco was a real battle. So we've been looking forward to you doing this for a long time. It's cost-effective and probably much, much better service.
Any questions? Thank you guys so much. Thank the panel today. Ms. Peckrush. I'd like to call, close the public hearing on House Bill 5031. Open the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2186. I'd like to call Mrs. Baxter. Good afternoon, Chair Carter, members of the subcommittee. My name is Tricia Baxter. I'm the administrator for the Office of Payment Accuracy and Recovery at the Department of Human Services. And I'm here this afternoon to speak with you regarding House Bill 2186. This really falls in nicely with what you've just heard about the process improvement efforts that are underway. Actually, one of the members of our staff in the financial services unit came up with this idea and tried to do it through an administrative rule, and upon advice of counsel, they said, no, you really need a statutory change to do this. The proposal is to be able to offset funds that are going out the door, to whether it be to clients or to providers. In most cases, these would be provider payments, when that same client or provider actually owes the department money. This would only be done in the cases where that money that's owed to the department is what is considered a liquidated debt. That means that a billing has been sent, there's been no payment on that billing, and all appeal rights have expired. So the provider or client, the individual that owes the money, is aware that they owe the money, and there's no appeal rights left for them to challenge that they owe that money. The current process is that money goes out the door, and in some cases, the check is never even cashed, and that was the issue that the financial services representative was trying to resolve. If a payment that goes out the door from the agency goes uncashed for 2 years, then that check is expired. It's reported to the Department of Administrative Services. They expire the check so that the check can no longer be cashed, and then Department of State Lands is informed of these funds that are outstanding that are owed to an individual. That then goes on their website, and the person can discover that and claim those funds. Well, what DHS had been doing was in looking at their debts that were owed to the agency. They would compare that with the listing on Department of State Land's website and find that, oh, this same person has money there. They would then request the funds back. So it was a lot of handoffs occurring with these funds. So what this concept would allow the agency to do in that situation would be, before those funds are expired, we could simply offset those funds to the debt that is outstanding at the agency. Right. What's that, Laura?
Thank you. The Bureau of State Lands, doesn't it take the money it collects and put it in a common school fund?
Senator or Chair Carter, Representative Garrard, I know that State Lands does do something with the common school fund. I can't speak specifically if that's what happens with these funds. I believe, though, that the individual whose funds those are have the right, or I know that they have the right to request those funds if they discover that those funds are being held at Department of State Lands.
Mm-hmm.
You may.
Yeah. Once State Lands has the check that hasn't been cashed and can't find the person, then that money does go into the Common School Fund, because that's the primary source of funding for the Bureau of State Lands.
Chair Carter, Representative Garrard. I'm sure that is what happens, except in this case, the Department of Human Services is discovering those funds in time to request those funds back from Division of State Lands. So we're getting the money anyway. It's not currently going into the Common School Fund. So what we're trying to do through this bill is to streamline that process, eliminating the handoffs. Another situation that arises is where we have a debt that we're collecting on within our Office of Payment Accuracy and Recovery, and we find that that person is now a provider for us. This debt could be very, very old, and now this person is out there earning money, and we're sending them checks every month, yet they owe us money on an old debt. What we have to do currently is to garnish ourselves, issue a garnishment to the Department of Human Services to get those funds back.
Oh, that's way too much.
This bill would allow us to simply offset those funds, and if we can get some electronic processes going, that would be even easier.
The question is Representative Cote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What kind of numbers are we talking about here in terms of scale? I'm just curious.
Chair Carter, Representative Kotek, as far as the overpayments that we're actually collecting on, the example I just gave where we're garnishing ourselves, that's maybe one or two a year. There's a timing issue there where we just can't do that very often. With the state lands funds, I think it is a higher number, and I could get those numbers for you. I don't have them currently. But they are working currently on a monthly process where they look at the expired checks and do a check with state lands before they run the process. Again, if we can make this an electronic process, it would remove the people completely from the scenario.
More questions? Senator Bates?
Just to follow up on Representative Kotek asked the same question I wanted to get answered, just more out of curiosity, is how much money is flowing back and forth every month? What's the average size of those checks? As an example, my office, we're applying some of this stuff at Mr. Ramsey taught me. I found out I had some people spending hours and hours and hours sending out checks for 75 cents, a dollar and a half, $2, and at the time to do it was not worth what the check was. It's better to write it off, forget it. So that kind of information would be kind of interesting to see.
Chair Carter, Senator Bates, I'd be glad to bring that information back for you tomorrow as far as how many dollars we're really talking about and how many individual transactions.
Senator Gordon?
Thank you. I'd like to go back to the question about the Common School Fund. And is the answer to the question, I just want to make sure I'm clear, is the answer to Representative Garrard's question that there is no effect on the Common School Fund?
Chair Carter, Senator Gordon, yes, that would be the answer, because we would request those funds back before they ever hit the Common School Fund.
Thank you.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would it be time now for a motion?
I can entertain a motion.
I would move that this committee...
Excuse me just one moment. Okay. I need to ask if there are any further questions, and I need to go into a work session. Mm-hmm. Are there further questions? Thank you very much. I'd like to go into a work session on House Bill 2186. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that this committee send House Bill 2186 to full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nathanson recommends House Bill 2186 to the full committee with a due pass recommendations. Objections?
I'd like discussion.
Oh, discussion. I'm going to go first.
Well, I'm just not sure I can vote in favor of a bill, Madam, that would, end the only institution on the face of the planet that, garnishes itself. Oregon is very unique in many ways, and we need to preserve some of these uniqueness.
Further discussion? Objections? Seeing none, it's the water. Representative Mason, will you carry this bill?
I would be happy to, and I'd like to be able to include some statistics that they would provide.
Thank you. I'd like for you to carry this to the full committee and to the House floor. Senate member for carrying. Thank you, Senator Bates. I think you guys, you've got 7 minutes. My goodness.
Ooh.
Great timing. Thank you very much. Committee dismissed.